Recordings have started.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the GNSO Bylaws Implementation Drafting Team call on the 6th of April at 1400 UTC. On the call today, we have Steve Metellus, David Maher, Prasanna Abadi, Steve DelBianco, Wolf Ulrich Melbin, Samantha Eisner, and Erica Randall. We have apologies from Erica Mann, Yolf Helsingis, and Matthew Shears, and Darcy Southall, who will be joining later in the call. From staff, we have Marika Koning, Mary Wong, Glenn D. Sancheri, Amaral Sather, Julie Hedlund, and myself, Michelle B. Snyder. As a reminder to all, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and I'll turn the call back over to you, Steve.
Thanks. It's Steve DelBianco. I'm chair of our drafting team, and I'm pretty sure this will be our last session. Again, most of you were together when we were in Copenhagen. Steve Metellus, I know that you couldn't be with us there. I hope you're doing well. And as far as that, you two were unable to be there in Copenhagen. But we had a very constructive meeting and nearly completed the list of open items. We have four left that we wanted to get through in the next hour, and I believe we can do that. The four items, items 37, 44, 45, and 46, I know it's a challenge to read it in the small Adobe, but Marika circulated Word docs that are much easier for you to control in your own viewing. If anybody needs them, indicate in the chat, and staff will resend those documents. There's a theme with these four items that are left. One is this notion of an individual in the bylaws. It says an individual initiating a petition that rises up through the structure of constituencies and stakeholder groups and then makes its way to the ACNSO, that's the decisional participant in the empowered community. So we'll need to work out how each of the constituencies and stakeholder groups responds to individual petitions and routes them off. And then another set of discussions we'll have is how does council handle a petition that was duly processed by a constituency and stakeholder group? And then finally, with respect to board removal, whether it's NOMCOM, the two GNSO directors, or the full board, with respect to that, determining the process by which GNSO makes its decision on a board removal. So that's a limited set of issues, and I think if we stay disciplined about process, we'll probably get through all four. Are there any other comments to open things up? Okay, great. Why don't we go right to item 37, and it references the question of an individual petitioning for rejection of an ICANN budget or operating plan, which is a specific community power we created in the transitional bylaws. I know that the bylaws declare the notion of a petition process of decisional participant receives a rejection action petition. So the question that we have in front of us is, given that the stakeholder groups and constituencies are the bylaws created members of GNSO, then those stakeholder groups and constituencies have to be the conduits to get to council. And what staff had pointed out to us is that we somehow needed standards for how a petition is raised in the GNSO. And I differed from that by suggesting that we have procedures by which stakeholder groups and constituencies, through their counselors on the GNSO council, raise things as motions, and they get seconds as part of, and the question would be, can that petition process be adequate? And if it is, then it's just up to the stakeholder groups and constituencies on our own to work out how we instruct our counselors to raise a petition. But there's no notion of an individual, a global citizen coming to council as an individual petitioner is probably not relevant to this case. It's only the stakeholder groups and constituencies that are the appropriate members of the GNSO. So, Marika, I want to be sure. Hi, Lori Schulman. I want to be sure, Marika, that we understand the challenge in front of us on item 37 is that standards aren't necessarily the case. It's simply a procedure. When I hear standards, I think of the work that Lori Schulman's group did on good faith standards. And I don't believe that's what you mean by standards. You mean the process by which a petition is raised.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think that is correct. I think the one question, and I think you flagged it as well, and actually probably would be looking more towards Sam as an expert on the bylaws here. Indeed, if that definition, as you describe it, with the GNSO having, you know, members through constituencies and stakeholder groups, meets that definition of an individual as it's referenced in the bylaws. And you know, I don't have any specific opinion on one or the other, but I think that is indeed the crux of the question here, whether that indeed aligns or whether, you know, the intention is different, that an individual indeed is broader than, you know, members of the GNSO stakeholder groups and or constituencies.
Marika, this is Sam. I might be able to help clarify a little further, too. So I think I agree with both of you. So the identification of the word standards didn't mean to reflect anything other than procedures. There should be some identification of how the GNSO expects to have that happen. And so if it is indeed that the GNSO expects to have those individual petitions raised within the stakeholder groups or constituencies and have those brought to council, that's the type of thing that should be documented, but it doesn't require that there be a place in the GNSO operating procedures or otherwise that says, here's how one person can bring something to the council.
Sam, this is Steve Del Bianco. A question for you. As the other ACs and SOs are attempting to implement the empowered community for rejecting a budget, are they interpreting individual to be citizens of the world or members of their respective AC and SO?
I don't know universally how that's happening. I believe that in many of the groups, they are looking at it from their own membership pool or those who normally come to them, as opposed to giving a pass for anyone who might be interested anywhere in the global citizenry to come and raise it.
Thank you, Sam. That's very consistent with the interpretation I had and was a very active member of the CCWG that came up with this. It wasn't as if an individual could shop their petition idea. They could shop their petition idea to any AC and SO, but it would have to be a member of an AC and SO that was part of the empowered community that would, through their own procedures, decide to advance that petition as an official member of that AC and SO. Steve Metallitz, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve Metallitz. Well, the problem with what you just said, Steve, is that our SO has no individual members. No individual is a member of the GNSO. So,
of course not.
So I get it that you don't want someone coming in off the street and trying to invoke this process here, but what I'm understanding here is that I know the decisional participants are gatekeepers to this petition process. You can't initiate a petition unless you are a decisional participant. I think that's correct anyway. But are you suggesting that we have a second set of gatekeepers that you have to first, if someone has a problem, they first have to come to the relevant, let's park that for a second, the relevant stakeholder group or constituency and persuade them to put something forward within the GNSO Council in order to invoke this process? Is that what you're suggesting here, or would there be some other method for doing this?
Hi, Steve. It's Steve Del Bianco. Good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
That is exactly what I'm suggesting, is that GNSO, as a decisional participant, has, by the charter, by the bylaws, it has members, and those are the constituencies and stakeholder groups. I know the fact that council throws on a couple of NOMCOM appointees is an artifact of how council votes, but they're not the same thing as members of GNSO. So it's my notion that an individual could approach the BD, the IPC, the NCS, the NCUC, and if that individual convinced anyone that was a member of that constituency and stakeholder group that they needed a petition to block a budget, because that's what this particular power is about, then it would be up to the NCUC, the BC, or the IPC, through their own decision-making processes, decide whether they wanted to create a petition for this decisional action. Now, that petition then would have to make its way as a motion introduced at council, and it would certainly need a second, or it could never be approved by a majority of these House. So the motion would be considered just like a ordinary motion of council, and would require a majority of each House to say that council, or GNSO in this case, GNSO is supporting a petition as a decisional participant to block a budget. How does that sound, Steve?
Well, it just puts an extra step in the process, and therefore, you know, because there is a time limit here, as I understand it. Well, I'm not totally clear, but I know it has to be the decisional participant basically has to act by the 21st day after something was done. This could either be a budget or adoption of a standard bylaw, as I understand it. But so that means we have to go through quite a number of steps within 21 days. The individual approaches the SG or C. The SG or C does its process and decides to support that petition. They file a motion, and you know, then that whole set of procedures gets invoked. So it's
all right.
Hard to imagine that happening within 21 days. Maybe it could be.
Right, and so the constituency or stakeholder group who wants to mount the petition, it is up to each of us individually to have procedures that we do for circulating emails, seeking approval, and moving things on. And each of us have our own charters. I just finished this process for the work stream too, and each of our charters are different, and some are not even clear on the process by which the NCUC or the BC decide to advance something to the point of suggesting a motion. And I don't believe, in response to Marika's question in the chat, I don't believe there should be a requirement then for SGs and Cs to define a procedure for their respective members to request a petition. Because, Marika, I believe it's no different than a member of the BC saying to our leadership, it says to the members of the BC, I think we should comment on this public comment period. I think we should send a letter to the board. Here's, I think, a motion that we should introduce into council. Each of the constituencies and stakeholder groups, we do this every day. And the procedures that we each have for that don't need to be specially crafted regarding item number 37. So unless I'm missing something that's legally required in the bylaws, it would be better if we allowed the SGs and Cs, through their own procedures, to recognize an individual and to properly process a request. But now let's get to the timing, and we began to discuss this in Copenhagen. Even if the BC turned around a motion within 24 hours, so we're on day 20 of the day 21, I really worry that council itself, which has deadlines for notice of motions and notice of meetings, that council itself could never convene in the ordinary fashion in time to consider that, debate it, and vote on it. So here's where we need to be creative. What can we do to expedite through council to consider a motion that is pursuant to a petition like this so that we can actually turn it around in 21 days. So why don't we take a cue on that? It's hard for me to keep up with the chat as well. So if any of you have put something in the chat that's directly relevant to this, please speak up so we can get it surfaced. And Amr, you asked the question for individuals outside. So, our email addresses are published, and the list itself, though, is not accessible to every single individual on the planet. So I think within the BC, if there was a business that happened not to be a member of the BC, the only way they could get something into the BC list is to do it through a member of the BC, or through an individual who has access to that list. So I think that that individual will need to find out which group represents them. It could be that they are able to access ALAC, the at-large group, or NCUC, but I don't know that each of us are going to write procedures to allow non-members to start a petition process. Steve Metalitz, your hand is up.
Yes, Steve Metalitz again. Well, I guess I wonder, do we have to write this procedure now, or do we simply have to say that there needs to be an expedited procedure for the council to act on proposed petitions brought forward by an SG or C, and then, you know, or maybe say develop a procedure that will enable action on this within, let's say, a 7-day time period, because the total is 21 days. So, or do we have to actually devise that procedure? Because I'm not familiar enough with the existing procedures to know what changes would need to be made for, like, a special case. For example, this would pretty much have to be done by phone. Obviously, it wouldn't be an in-person meeting, or maybe even by email polling or something like that, because it would be very hard to pull together a council meeting even by phone on a very short notice. So anyway, I guess I'm wondering whether we have to spell that out in this document, or whether we simply say one job is for the council to adopt an expedited procedure to act on petitions that are brought to it by an SG or C or more than one during that time period. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Steve. It's Steve Del Bianco. The discussion we had in Copenhagen answers the general question. While in Copenhagen, for instance, we were discussing the procedure by which document requests would be forwarded from a constituency or stakeholder group through to the empowered community administrative group. And we said, what do we have in the current GNSO procedures that would satisfy this rubber stamp notion that council itself couldn't get in the way of a power that we had intended to be available to any constituency and stakeholder group? So staff was really helpful at saying, well, let's look at the consent agenda process and ask whether the consent agenda process gives us that conduit that we needed. And staff came back and said, well, you have to do a few tweaks to that process. So let's follow that same model here. Let's first ask staff, what is the process today by which council can do expedited consideration of motions and calling of conference calls? And if staff comes back with a description that fits, we'll indicate that that's adequate. If it isn't adequate, Steve, all we would need to do here today is describe the key features for how that procedure needs to be changed. And then staff would come back in their staff report with specific changes to GNSO procedures for this expedited consideration of a council motion. And before I move on to Wolf Ulrich, I would like staff to confirm whether what I just said makes sense. Okay, Wolf Ulrich, and then we have multiple people from staff weighing in the chat. So we need somebody that speaks for staff, and I'm looking to Marika to answer the question about whether there is an existing procedure for expedited consideration of motion and the convening of a council vote and call. And before you answer that, Marika, let me let Wolf Ulrich put his question into the queue. Go ahead, Wolf Ulrich.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's Wolf Ulrich speaking. Well, just coming back to that question from Steve Metalitz and what you have said, I also raised this point whether it is necessary for this group to work on this on these procedures. I understand that all let me say all output of this drafting team with regards to GNSO procedures is going to be incorporated in the GNSO procedures then, and that would mean that. For example, some things which have not been or could not be detailed right now because of their complexity should be taken into consideration by that team which is responsible for the GNSO procedures. So we have this this team which was formerly SCI and is now the GNSO review team. That's one point, and I understand from former discussions on the SCI with regards to procedures, there will be detailed questions about that, as you already raised some of them, and it needs time well to answer these questions. And that comes to my last question. In this regard, are we in a hurry to come to an to a detailed procedure right now. So as we are just starting this with all these processes, so I don't see the hurry of that at the time being. So I would prefer, well, just to set a frame as you outlined, started to outline, and then hand it over to the genus overview team. Thanks.
Thanks, Wolf Ulrich. I believe that the time pressure is for this group, the drafting team, to, on this call, to conclude whether existing GNSO procedures would satisfy what we, as a group, believe delivers what the GNSO, how it should handle something like a rejection. If we don't believe existing procedures are adequate and we can't identify them, then we should indicate the high-level requirements for procedure. For instance, we might say that the 10-day period is too long for notification of a motion, and we are recommending it be 5 days or 4 days. So we should have high-level recommendations. The staff report will come back, and the staff report is the item that will be published for public comment. You see, it's not just our drafting team report. That's a component of what staff will publish. But the public comment on this GNSO bylaws implementation will include a staff report, which will put some meat on the bones of items that we think need to be further developed. So that staff report will be the most significant level of detail on which public comment will be held. So I do think that with respect to timing, let's use this call, let's use the next 34 minutes if we can, to say whether we think there has to be a change to procedures. We don't have to detail what the new procedures are, Wolf Ulrich. We just have to say that the standard procedures for GNSO motions takes too long to fit within the 21 to 28-day window. Marika.
Yes, thank you, Steve. So this is Marika. So yes, I think there are a number of procedures that are already available. Staff just needs a little bit more time to look at those, especially with regards to timing, to see if they may work or whether certain tweaks may need to be made. One thing just on the top of my head could be indeed that maybe the council just needs to schedule a number of meetings throughout the year that can be used for this purpose. But if no petition is available, those meetings get canceled. But at least they're on the schedule and notification and deadlines are in place. But again, maybe allow us a bit of time to look at what is currently available and noting as well the 28-day overall time period to see whether that fits within existing procedures or whether an alternative or tweaks need to be suggested to make sure that fits. And I just want to draw your attention, I don't know if you saw the comment that Sam posted in the chat, which I think goes a bit to our previous conversation, which seems to suggest that procedures will be required detailing how petition process would work, because the bylaws, I think, specify specific elements that need to be made clear or communicated with regards to who can submit the process, how the decisional participant then determines whether or not to accept the petition. So there may be some work that is needed in that regard as well.
Marika, it's Steve. I think that our team, and I'll ask the other members who are on the call, I think that our team is clear that it's the constituencies and stakeholder groups that themselves will determine whether a global citizen or individual has given them a petition they want to surface, and that the constituency and stakeholder group would introduce it as a council motion, and that council motion would need to be approved by a majority of each house. However, we believe that there's not enough time to get that done under the new bylaws requirements, so we are interested in suggestions for how to expedite that process so that it can be done. But I don't think any of us agree that each constituency and stakeholder group or the GNSO in total would need to delineate how an individual approaches the IPC as a member of the IPC and how the IPC considers whether it wants to introduce a motion for a rejection petition. I know Sam is on the phone and not easily able to speak, but Sam, if you want to weigh in on that, I don't believe that our procedures need to dig down and tell the IPC how it considers petitions suggested by an IPC member. Sam Eisner, you're next.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So I think that the GNSO operating procedures need to say how someone would approach the IPC or the BC, for example, no. But I think that they do need to say that in order for a petition to be raised, that they would, the person would have to approach one of the constituent entities of the GNSO, and that there, I think when you look at the bylaws themselves, because they specify that there should be procedures identified about how an individual brings a petition, that then there would be a requirement to push to the entities within the GNSO to develop that documentation for each one, because that's the transparency part. How do people know how to get into the process? And so it doesn't have to be documented in the GNSO operating procedures how an individual goes to each of the entities, but it has to be documented somewhere, and that is the obligation of the decisional participant to make sure that that happens. So possibly that could be a recommendation or an outcome of this group that says, okay, each SG and C, you need to think about how you're going to do that and create documentation of how that happens within your group.
Thank you, Sam. This is Steve Del Bianco. So I think we do agree that the GNSO procedures could shout out a transparent warning to say that if an individual wishes the GNSO to be the decisional participant to initiate a rejection action petition, that individual would need to communicate with individual members of the GNSO, which are the constituencies and stakeholder groups, and to convince that constituency or stakeholder group to introduce a proper motion for the rejection to be considered by council pursuant to council procedures. So it's a matter of giving people a heads up that they need to run it through the constituencies and stakeholder groups. There is no direct channel for a global citizen to put a council motion on the table. And if Sam, if you don't have anything further, we go to Lori Shulman. And Mary Wong, while we're waiting for Lori, Mary, we duly note that the community will have been aware of the need for a rejection, but our question is, with a 10-day notice period, sorry, a 10-day advance period for a motion, plus any meeting notice periods, we're asking staff to tell us whether you believe we can get a meeting convened so that council could vote on the motion. And we wouldn't want someone to be able to defer that council vote, which is a typical custom that's done in council today. So if I, as the only constituency, the BC didn't like this rejection, the BC could ask for a deferral, which eliminates the ability for GNSO to put a rejection in. So that's why these procedures have to be run through. It has to be a required consideration by council, no deferral allowed, because that would blow it through the bylaws window of 21 days. And we want to be sure that we don't run afoul of procedural concerns with respect to meeting notices, concerns about quorum, and concerns about advance posting of a motion. Lori Shulman? Lori, we're not able to hear you. Lori, type it into the chat if you don't mind, because we're not able to hear you. All right, so I'd kind of like to summarize it. Mary Wong is acknowledging, and Sam Eisner checked the box, we are recommending the GNSO procedures declare that individuals wishing to initiate a rejection action petition will need to approach a member of a constituency and stakeholder group and use that constituency stakeholder group procedures to form a proper motion for council. So it would have to be duly seconded and considered by council, and we may require new procedures in GNSO for the expedited consideration of a motion without the ability to defer. So I would appreciate a check mark if the members of the drafting team would support what I just described as our instructions to staff. Fantastic. Wolf Ulrich? David Maher, please. If you don't like it, let us know. I mean, hit a negative sign or say something. Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. David Maher? All right, not hearing David. But we did get six yeses on this one. So staff, we think you can clearly agree now, but staff, you have instructions that are clear enough on that. I look for somebody from staff to speak for that. Thank you, Marika. Appreciate that. All right, we'll move on to the second. Let's see if we can get this done. The second one is item 44, which is the new community power to remove a petition to remove a nominating committee director. And there are 8 directors on the board right now, which still boggles my mind, but 8 directors on our board come from the nominating committee. And the removal petition for that is, in many respects, very similar to the conversation we just had, which was a rejection of a fundamental bylaw, a rejection of a bylaws change, or a rejection of a budget. So the first thing I'd like to ask is, do the members of the drafting team believe that the same procedure we just described for item 37 could be copied for item 44? Let's take that on board. And if there's any reason it could not be used, then let's hear about it now. Yeah, good. I had a feeling that 44 would follow 37. They both have very similar notions about individuals getting things kicked off, running it through an AC, an SO, through constituencies and stakeholder groups, and having a 21-day period. Okay, so I have a couple of hands up about whether item 44 can follow 37. Steve Metallitz, you're first.
Yes, this is Steve Metallitz. In general, I agree with you. I guess I'm just not clear on whether this necessarily has the same time pressure, because, again, someone who's more familiar with this provision would have to enlighten me. But the one we just talked about is triggered by an external event. You know, the ICANN board approves a budget on X date, or they approve a standard bylaw change on X date. Whereas this, the timing is really in the hands of the petitioner, if you will. There's some person is serving as a nominating committee director, and the individual decides that person should be removed. They can choose when to go to the, approach a stakeholder group or constituency and try to get support for a removal petition. So I agree that they start the clock, but I guess I'm saying they start the clock rather than the external action starting the clock. I don't know if that makes a difference. In general, I agree with you.
Got it, Steve. And let's just speak specifically to that. If an individual approached the BC and said, we need to remove a particular nominating committee board director, and the BC agreed, then as soon as the BC convinced council to say that we need a petition to remove that board member, that starts the 21-day clock. So the BC and that individual had plenty of time to sort of sort out support and get counsel to take it up in the ordinary course of business. But once the GNSO, as a decisional participant, started the petition process, I believe that's when the 21-day clock starts to tick. And I'm looking for staff to verify that. So you're right, Steve. It's an external event of our own doing,
yeah,
to say somebody in GNSO put a motion up. There's not a clock that starts until council itself approves that motion.
I'm not sure that's right, Steve. This is Steve Metallitz. But at least this is not the double gatekeeper problem, in other words, in the timing. In the other one, in the previous example, two gates had to be cleared within 21 days in order for of an external event, in order for the petition to go forward. Here, only one has to be cleared within 21 days. You might spend a month convincing the BC that this director is so terrible he or she should be removed, but only once the BC makes the motion, I would submit, is the 21-day period. And part of this is this tension about individual and so forth, but I'm just wondering whether, in fact, maybe a little less time pressure on this one. Thanks.
Yes, Steve, I believe the 21 days starts after a decisional participant like GNSO has already approved its petition. So if the BC started it and it took 2 or 3 meetings to get council to approve it by a majority of each house, if Council Vani did approve it, then as soon as Council notifies the Empowered Community Administrative Committee, that starts the 21 days. It's not within Council, but the 21 days. It's outside of Council. And during that 21-day period, we know that the decisional participant for GNSO is going to have to react to things that happen. But I have to agree with you that it doesn't have a 21-day clock inside of GNSO. So we might even be able to make item 44 more simple than item 37 in that regard. Anything else, Steve, before we go on to Sam?
Well, again, just looking at this section 3.1b, it's, you know, the decisional participant receives a petition, and then that sets the clock running, because that's the nominating committee director removal petition date, and then the decisional participant has to accept or reject it. So I think there is a 21-day clock for the GNSO, but it doesn't start until the SG or C has already made its decision. Made its decision, said, yeah, we want to put forward a petition, or we want to forward Joe Blow's petition to remove this director.
So I'm reading 3.1b now as well, so to make sure I understand that better. Your point now is that if the council itself, speaking for GNSO, the decisional participant, received a petition duly approved by the business constituency, mm-hmm. that alone starts the clock.
Yeah, which would probably be in the form of a motion, I guess, or whatever.
Uh-huh, right. And a 21-day window for a motion could still run into procedural problems.
Oh, absolutely.
So
your point about deferral is certainly applied.
Right. So we still need to bake those protections in, so that council would have to take an up or down vote within the 21-day window. It couldn't be defeated by delay, I guess,
right.
That's what I'm thinking. Great point, Steve. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Sam Eisner?
Thanks. I was typing some in the chat to concur with what Steve Metalis' reading of the bylaws. The 21-day period does start from the moment that the petition is received from into the GNSO out of whoever you're allowing to submit the petition. And then the other thing to recall is during the board removal process on the NOMCOM, during that 21-day time period, there's also a requirement to convene discussions. And so you'd want to consider not only the timeframes within which the GNSO Council would take an action on the petition in the up or down vote, but before doing that, there has to be an allowance for a discussion period with the director at issue and the petitioner, et cetera, within that 21-day period.
Got it. So the discussion requirement kicks off at the point at which, say, the business constituency, through its procedures, decided to do a petition for a motion to remove a NOMCOM director. And that would be in the form of a motion before council to start the council machinery moving. We would need to provide a procedure by which that kind of a petition could not be deferred on council. We would need to define a procedure in GNSO by which council consideration of that BC motion would include a discussion. And presumably it would be a council discussion that anyone in GNSO could listen to, a discussion with the particular director from the NOMCOM. So we would need to write those procedures up. And ultimately, at the end of that discussion, if the GNSO constituency and stakeholder group continued to want to proceed with the petition, they would ask council to vote on it. And we had a threshold that we had come up with in our earlier, I don't recall, was the was this one of the ones that was a majority of each house, or was it a higher threshold for this petition to move forward to the empowered community? So while we're checking on that, it sounds like we do need clarity at the GNSO level describing the fact that an individual seeking a petition for removal would need to run it through the constituency and stakeholder group. A constituency or stakeholder group would use its documented procedures for consideration of that petition, and if it resulted in a constituency or stakeholder group introducing a motion for council, that at that point the 21-day period begins and council procedures would have to define a discussion period with the board member being subject to the removal, and there could be no opportunity to defer or delay the motion in such a way that it would lie outside of the 21-day window. And Sam, your hand is up. Anything, Sam? Okay, thank you. So it's not an exact copy of item 37. It is different than item 37. But with Steve Vitalis' clarification, I think we have a plan to proceed here. Now, Sam, what did you just say in the chat? You standardized language for petitions. Yeah, you're right by using standardized language, but look, this, since we are allowing the constituencies and stakeholder groups to advance these petitions, the petitions are motions in the language of the GNSO. Since the majority of drafting team members wanted council to speak for GNSO, a petition must take the form of a motion. And it can have the word petition in it, because ultimately it will be a petition to the other members of the empowered community. I get that. But it will have to take the form of a motion that works its way through the process of council, and our procedures need to indicate room for discussion, but not room for delay, so that the 21 days can be done. Is there anyone who has any objection to that instruction to staff coming from the drafting team? Yeah, thank you, Marika. A motion to initiate a petition is the right kind of language to use. Any objections to that summary and instructions to staff? Okay, fantastic. Thank you. That's two down. The next one is item 45. And item 45 is the removal of one of the two directors on ICANN's board that come from GNSO. And we're all aware that the bylaws themselves specifically delineate how the two houses of GNSO each get to select a director, and we're aware that there are procedures documented in GNSO for how the registries and registrars, that is the contract party house, how they select their particular board member. I'm also painfully aware that the non-contracted party house doesn't have procedures. We started the intersessional in Iceland at working on those procedures, but we're not there yet, and we're right in the middle of selecting our current director. So I understand that procedures are there for the selection of the board member. So for item 45, it's my opinion, Wolf Ulrich had agreed, Steve Metallis had agreed, that the house who selected the board member is the house who decides to initiate a removal petition of its director. Now, some members of this drafting team, when we discussed it several months ago, believe that if the contracted parties wanted to remove their director, that their petition for that would still be subject to approval from the other side of GNSO, the other house. And at least three of us in the drafting team did not believe that was the case. So that's sort of old news right now, and let's find out what the drafting team believes today. Should the removal of the contracted party house board member be subject to approval from the other side of GNSO? Let's take a cue on that. I had noted in the comments that we were split on this, and it was pretty clear down the middle. So it was Farzi, you're here. I believe it was the – I have to go back to the notes, but I believe it was someone from the – non-commercial stakeholders group that thought the other house should be able to interfere with a petition to remove one side's director. Do you happen to recall? Go ahead, Farzi.
Hi, Steve. Thank you. Sorry, I have been kind of, I read the notes. I could not attend remotely, so I So the thing is that that when we're talking about the removal, we are discussing whether the GNSO Council has to be involved with this, or like both. So when you're talking about the both halves being involved for the removal.
Yeah, this is item 45, so the removal of the director for a single house. When we concluded on this, in our report, the report that the drafting team approved and sent over for item 45, here's what we said. The discussion whether the three-quarter threshold required in bylaws should be applied across the council or only in the house that nominated seems to be a bit vague, because we had suggested the five drafting team members believe that voting would occur only in the house that nominated the director, while other drafting team members said the entire GNSO should vote on the discussion. And the commercial stakeholders group was unanimous in that it should only be the house that sent the director. And I actually believe that the registrars and registries were in the same place on that. So that's why I'm turning to you as the non-commercial stakeholders group to see whether you want to continue to argue for that position, or do we allow this drafting team to say that we have a majority recommendation that each house alone comes up with the three-quarters vote. So that's sort of the item on the table. I'd like to propose that the drafting team's recommendation remove the vagueness by saying the majority of the drafting team prefers that the house that named the director is authorized to vote by three-quarters of its counselors for that house to initiate a petition for removal of that director, and it would not be subject to delay or defeat by actions of the other house. Marzi, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, so the other house if effectively we are not going to give the right to the other house to kind of vote on this and participate in the decision for the removal. And when you say GNSO, you mean the GNSO Council, right?
No, sorry. This is a petition of removal of an ICANN Board of Directors member that was designated by the contracted parties. I think that's seat 13, and seat 14 is the non-contracted party. So we're speaking of the Board of Directors removal, and it was your group, I believe, who wanted the other house to have something to say about whether the house that named a director could remove the director. You're in the minority on this, and if you're not exactly certain of it, it may not have been a call in which you participated.
Okay, I do remember. Okay, so I think we are still in the position that the other house should also be involved. And but this is like a minority position, as you're saying now?
The drafting team has had several recommendations that were not consensus, that were not full consensus, and we would indicate in our report that a majority, and this is one of those where we indicated the majority of the drafting team preferred that the house that named the director be able, through a three-quarter vote, to initiate a petition for recall, and that it would not be subject to delay or interference or approval of the other house. And that is what I'm recommending staff implement through the draft report that they would circulate. They would circulate procedures for that. And again, you a chance to speak about whether you want to whether you want to maintain that position that you think the other house should be able to approve it as well. either way, I think the majority is what it is. And I'll ask for another show of hands in just a moment to be sure that that's still where we are as a drafting team.
Yes. Well, so you're kind of so yes, I understand now. So yes, I do think that the other house should be involved. But then and I think we can just jot that down. And if the majority thinks it should be otherwise, then we can just go ahead and. Sorry, there's like it's so blowing here. So yeah, and then we can just go ahead and finalize this as it took place then.
Okay, and this has a 21-day window, similar to what we covered in item 44. So we'll need staff to describe procedures by which a consideration of, say, the contracted parties to remove their director, that could not be delayed outside of the window, and that we're asking staff to suggest that a three-quarters approval of the counselors in the contracted party house would be sufficient for that petition to be approved by council. So that probably gets described in the council procedures in the same way that we discussed, the way that council forwards the nomination of a director for seats 13 and 14. And we did discuss this on the last call because the bylaws of ICANN describe the way the GNSO selects those two seats. And I had asked how it is that council officially endorses the contract party's member. And is this something that has a role for the consent agenda, where we make sure that it's clear that if the contracted parties have voted three quarters to remove their director, that can't be blocked, and that council then advances that in the empowered community as a decisional participant petition. And Wolf Ulrich is pointing out the notion that they can file an opinion. The other house can file an opinion, but shouldn't be division a decisive role. And if you recall, Lori Schulman, as part of Workstream 2, published standards. And in this case, I mean the word standards. Standards for good faith in the decision to remove a director. And I think those would apply here as well. Sam Eisner.
Hi. Thanks, Steve. So there are a few different decisional points within this. And so, of course, there's the ability for a group to bring a petition. I hear that because of the way the council or the GNSO selects the directors, clearly that's assigned to each house, and so that petition for a particular director would have to be initiated within that particular house, right?
Good.
And then there's a 21-day period. And during that period, there has to be, again, like the NOMCOM process, there has to be a discussion period, which includes both the person bringing the petition. So it's always important to make sure that you have the individual bringing the petition noted any place. This goes across because that impacts some of the further conversations. That's a separate issue. And then also during that conversation period, one of the people that's essential to that conversation under the bylaws is the person that's appointed to the AC administration from the GNSO. And so just to flag, there is a possibility that one of the people that might be participating in that conversation is from a different house than the house that brought up the petition. Then after that 21-day period, there's the vote on whether or not the petition goes forward into the more public discussion, the community process on it. And so then, of course, anyone can put in their discussion during that phase. And then there's the final decision point after that community comment period. And so there are really three different things, or really two different times, when the council itself would be expected under the bylaws to take a vote of council. And so then it's, you know, then the question is the two-thirds, would you require to go onto the consent agenda with no right of a refusal by the other house or that? But I think it's important on this one to remember there are multiple points, and across all the other ones, there are also multiple points of decision. So you probably want to make sure that you have those accounted for across, and it's not just the initiation of a petition or the acceptance of a petition, but the ultimate decision on that action that's contemplated in the petition as well.
That's great clarification, Sam. And when you talk about the word individual, picking up on what Mary Wong said in the chat, for this purpose, is the individual would go to the particular stakeholder groups, like registrar or registry, if they wanted to get rid of the contracted party house director. And that doesn't start the clock in this case, because until the registrars or registries, because they are the members of the contract party house, until they duly introduce a motion for petition to remove, to use Mary's vernacular, then that motion, properly introduced before council, starts one of the periods within council. And we just want to clarify that the drafting team recommendation is that while all GNSO participants can participate in discussion, it is only the House whose director is at issue, and only that House can introduce a motion for removal, and only that House gets to vote on that motion within the 21-day window, and that vote is a three-quarter majority of that House, and that council may not defer or defeat such a motion if it's duly approved by a three-quarters. And we do need your procedural assistance to accommodate a discussion period, right? Accommodate a discussion period within that window. Go ahead.
Well, I do have a concern, though, both on the NOMCOM and on this director removal process. There are protections built in the bylaws about the point where the individual brings the petition. And so if now it's being, and I'm thinking through this a bit, and this might impact other parts of our conversation as well. The point about that protection is that the moment that this hits a discussion path, that someone says, I want to take this director out, that there's an immediate requirement within a 21-day period to say that you bring the director in, you start having conversations with them. And so if there's an allowance for an undefined period of time within either of the houses to banter about how they, whether they want to do it or not, it's kind of subverting a bit of the intention of the bylaw, that when someone when the individual raises the petition, so when the person brings to light the fact that they want to challenge this, and that the directors would then have a chance to participate in the discussion. And
Sam,
this one you might want to look at
differently. Right, but Sam, I believe that the drafting team is giving you a very clear view that for purposes of GNSO, the word individual is only one time, where we instruct people that if you're an individual and you want the GNSO to do something, you need to work through the constituencies and stakeholder groups. And that's the disclosure part we agreed to earlier. However, the word individual, for purposes of starting any 21-day clock or requirement for conversation, that individual is a constituency or stakeholder group. I don't think any of us want to force a board member into a discussion period. If a single human being simply is rattling the cage in the business constituency to remove our side's board of director member, because there may be no support within the BC for that, and it is over, right? And it is not necessary for, I think, to start a clock, because one individual started an email string inside of the BC. I believe that you need some individual action by a constituency or stakeholder group to start the process for discussion and start the clock. So we weren't wanting to trigger all that. Go ahead.
I'm just not sure that particularly in this frame of the board removal process, that allowing a full discussion at a point where there's no requirement for the board to be involved actually meets the bylaws.
All right, so we weren't saying a full discussion, because a full discussion would mean that the decision makers are on the line. If you believe that the bylaws require that the BC itself, when deliberates on whether to move ahead, if you believe that that starts the bylaws requirement for involvement, then if that's your opinion, then we'll honor what legal's opinion is on that. But our interpretation is that the constituencies and stakeholder groups are the first movers, and until they've moved, there isn't any official trigger of a process. They haven't introduced a motion for petition Therefore, it hasn't even satisfied the minimum level of support that merits a conversation with the board member. That would be my interpretation, but I'm anxious to hear other drafting team members too. Steve Metalis?
Yes, this is Steve Metalis. Steve, I agree with your interpretation, and I think in practice, we have to be careful how you phrase these motions and so forth, and it may be that in practice we would say, the BC is bringing forth this motion on behalf of individual, so-and-so, but it's been approved by the BC, and here's what we propose to petition for the removal of such-and-such director. So you might have to, bring the individual in there. I think what would normally happen in this case is the individual would bring this issue to the relevant constituency or stakeholder group, and there would be discussion in there. And Sam, I don't understand. Are you saying that the IPC could not hold a meeting to discuss whether we think that we want to support a petition to remove the board member that we helped select because the board member would not be present? That I don't understand that interpretation at all. That doesn't displace the need after a formal petition has been prepared and has been approved by the GNSO Council based on its procedures, which I think will provide for a vote only of the members of the affected House or of the selecting House. Then at that point, of course, there has to be during this 21-day period, the board member has to be brought into it. But I think in practice there will be ample discussions with the board member, but the idea that we couldn't hold a meeting and discuss this within the IPC or any other stakeholder group, I don't see where you get that. Thank you.
I agree with Steve. Back to you, Sam.
Yeah, so Steve, it's not about any individual discussion, right? There has to be the ability for someone to bring it, to raise it to the level. But if what I'm hearing based on our earlier conversation is, once the stakeholder group has said, or once the House has said that they want to remove the director, I think this needs to be plotted out more, because what we can't do is walk into a situation where we basically have a petition that cannot be rejected without having the time for conversation. And that's one of the things I'm concerned without seeing this lined up a little bit more is going on.
Okay.
And this is really important that we see that we see and we understand what is required around the timing of the discussion at the various levels to track it to see if it actually meets the bylaw. So it's not that at the first sign of an individual raising
right.
his hand that the board member has to be brought in, but there are protections built into this, and we can't. And that was a really important part of this process,
yeah.
for Paul Steve.
Yeah.
And so we
yeah.
need to make sure we maintain those protections.
Got it, Sam. And let's ask staff to do exactly what Sam said, to just lay this out in a horizontal timeline. But the initial part of that timeline is an individual approaching a constituency or stakeholder group. There are internal discussions in a constituency or stakeholder group. And then at the point at which the stakeholder group introduces a motion or petition to its House, I believe that that's the point you want to start the protections of participation and discussion of the board member. It's not at the point which council already voted by 3/4 to remove its director. That's too late, right? So the first point of discussion is an official recognition by the constituency or stakeholder group that it would like to introduce a motion for removal of its House director. So we could, I would propose that is when the board member participates and we begin that clock. How does that sound? Take a reaction to that. So it's not at the first conversation, and it's not at the point at which council has already voted, which I interpreted that maybe Steve Metalis was suggesting that, but in between, it's the point at which an official public motion has been introduced by the business constituency's counselor to say this is a motion for a petition to remove the non-contracted party House director. It must be approved by 3/4 of the non-contracted party House according to the procedures in the GNSO procedures manual, and to honor the bylaws participation and protection. This now begins the period when that director can participate in the discussion and others can comment, and we are under the good faith guidelines that are being developed in Workstream 2. And you're right, Sam. We do understand that the decisional participant, the GNSO, and in this case, the GNSO itself is the decisional participant, it will be discussing before the House director has its three-quarter vote. And I understand the rest of council can be on that call. They can participate in the discussion. But ultimately, it's the three-quarters of the House that named the director whose vote will be determinal. And Sam is typing. And your hand is up, Sam, as well, if you'd like to speak.
Sorry, that was an old hand. I think the other part of this is how does this fit in with the time frame? Because if there's still only a period from the time of the petitioning and the bylaws that initiates a conversation period to the end of the petition period where there's supposed to be a vote by the decisional participant, just something to keep in mind. So we're not
it's fully in mind, and if I didn't say it earlier, we are asking staff to carry over the discussion of timing. It includes the opportunity for discussion, the proper notice of a motion, the proper notice of a GNSO meeting, and the inability to defer and delay in a way that would have put it outside the 21 days. So we're agreeing that all that gets carried over onto item 45. But we are saying that the drafting team is clear that the clock doesn't start until the constituency and stakeholder group have officially introduced a proper motion for petition. That starts the clock, and that the vote will ultimately be three-quarters majority of the counselors on the House whose director is being up for removal. Are there any objections to that formulation by the members of the drafting team? Last call. Any objections or comments from drafting team members on that? And I do think the timeline, a little horizontal left-to-right timeline indicating who and what is the decision, would be really helpful too as part of the staff report that we put out. I'm trying to get clarity on what the drafting team's recommendation is so that staff can respond. Does staff understand then what a decision is on that? Okay, fantastic. Thank you. We only have one more left. It's item 46, which is a full board of directors recall. It's item 46, which is section 3.3 of the bylaws. And again, this one also has a individual submitting a petition to a decisional participant. And here we're completely consistent. The drafting team would like that clarified in the GNSO's public procedures that any individual wishing to initiate any of these four kinds of petitions would have to run through the procedures of a constituency or stakeholder group within the GNSO, and the procedures could even list them with links to the particular email address of the chair, chair@bc, et cetera. Then the individual groups themselves would consider that petition, the constituency and stakeholder group like the BC would consider that petition through our own procedures, and if we decided to introduce a motion for a full board recall, that motion being introduced is the first, let's make sure I'm looking at the procedures now to see whether there's a 21-day yes, there is a 21-day clock. And that's a decisional participant that has received a recall petition. So we believe that the council, if it receives a business constituency motion, that that is the 3.3B event. When council receives a proper motion approved by a constituency or stakeholder group, a motion for a petition to remove, that starts the 21-day. I'm trying to be consistent in any way I can, Sam and Marika, by drawing the same trigger points throughout this process. We're trying to respect the fact that GNSO is a collection of named constituencies and stakeholder groups, and we're trying to suggest that the first official motion has to be, the first official point is the introduction of a proper motion, and then we have the entire protection that a proper motion is not frustrated by a GNSO policy measure requiring X number of days for a notice of meeting, X number of days for a notice of a motion, and the ability for a party to defer instead of actually decide. And those themes are consistent here. So let's take a cue to discuss the full board recall, item 3.3 in the bylaws. It's item 46 on our list. Give everybody time to read that. And this is the last item on our agenda today. When the drafting team decided on what to do for item 46 and full board removal, we said it requires a GNSO super majority. And that was a consensus decision, noting that some of us didn't think council should vote. That was the majority view in the end. But we said that given the council does this, it should be a GNSO supermajority. And a GNSO supermajority is already a described threshold in the ICANN bylaws. So we're not changing that. We're simply tagging that as the voting threshold for council. Council would need to hold that vote within 21 days of the point at which a constituency and stakeholder group properly introduced a motion for petition. Thank you, Steve Metallitz. Are there any further comments on this one? Darcy, that's great. Thank you. Supermajority is the council. And since we had already recommended that, Darcy, mostly what staff is doing is questioning us about the point at which the clock starts, who is an individual, and that's really what council's after. So we're, and Wolf Ulrich, we agree completely. It is not an individual elected counselor. It's not Susan Kawaguchi, who happens to be our counselor in the BC. It would have to be the constituency and stakeholder group expressing approval for a motion, and that motion then could be introduced by the counselor. And what Wolf Ulrich's point is a key one, and that I hope the staff can reflect in this, and that all four of these items, the constituencies and stakeholder groups are the ones who instruct their counselor to introduce a motion for petition X. And Wolf Ulrich, there needs to be a second by another council member, because that's part of council procedures. The answer is yes. And if there's not a second, it's a pretty good point that it's not going to succeed. We agree, Mary, and we agree, Marika, and we are discussing the fact that a council member can do so, but we would like these procedures to indicate that a constituency and stakeholder group reaches the decision to have a petition initiated through a motion, and the councillor at that point is the conduit to introduce that motion. The councillor is also then elevated to the role of arguing for the motion. Other councillors will come up with objections to it. There would be a discussion back and forth. A board member would be on the phone in the case of board recall. So the counselors are fully in play at that point, but it needs to be a constituency and stakeholder group that kicks it off, not an individual counselor acting on their own. I think you're right, Marika. We need to say a directed introduction of a motion. Farzi.
We are not talking about the internal procedures of the of the stakeholder groups, because any counselor, I'd say they are based on their internal procedure, they can go to their stakeholder group and say we should do a motion. I'd say. So that would depend on the internal stakeholder group's procedure. Just want to clarify this.
Farzi, I believe the majority of this drafting team would say that how you start the discussion and conduct the discussion is completely up to you. But any motion introduced in council by the NCUC would have to be a motion that was directed by the NCUC. It could not just be the council themselves deciding on their own. It would have to be a directed motion for petition, since we need for the individual, for purposes of council considering it, it has to be the constituency and stakeholder group. It can't just be the person who happens to be your elected counselor. Does that clarify it, Farzi?
Yes. So, yes, I understood that. And then when we say any SO, any stakeholder group or constituency, that, again, depending on the stakeholder group internal procedure, the constituency can either individually file the motion or goes through its own stakeholder group. So, for example, NCUC doesn't have to go through NCSG to file the motion, but to file the petition, but or it can work individually.
Well, it can never be individual, and it should follow exactly the way the council procedures allocate the council seats to the constituencies and stakeholder groups. So we are trying to not change that at all, that if NCUC has two councillors, then those are the councillors who would be properly directed to introduce a motion that NCUC wants to recall a board member. And so if NCSG is the way that the bylaws currently describe, and I have to confess, I'm not always certain, and I am also aware that the NCSG and the NCUC don't often require directed voting, but it can be done. This drafting team is suggesting that it should be a directed vote. It may only be a directed vote for the purposes of these four petitions that we've discussed today. Thank you, Farzi. Are there any objections to that procedure that we've described? And again, the 21-day period kicks off, at which point a properly introduced motion comes from a counselor who was directed to do so by its constituency and stakeholder group. Are there any other comments on the call, and does staff have any other questions for the drafting team? All right, hearing none, I'd like to thank staff and all the members for enduring an extra 20 minutes on this call. I think it was worth it, especially given the alternative of having to organize another call. Marika, I take it that you'll summarize the conclusions of the drafting team and then begin to fashion the changes to your staff report. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Correct. I think as there are a number of items where you've asked us to go back and come back with suggestions, I think our first step would be indeed to come back and probably update the document that you see on the screen with a proposed change or response based on the conversation and based on our assessment of existing procedures and mechanisms or potential additions or tweaks to that. And then maybe once we have your feedback on that, and that can be through the mailing list or whether you already want to schedule another call, that's up to you to decide or to see how reactions are and determine whether a call is needed. But based on that feedback and once there is indeed a common agreement or a common viewpoint on how to move forward on those items, we can then indeed go ahead and update the staff report and then also start making indeed the proposed changes to the GNSO operating procedures and or ICANN bylaws, which then eventually will go out for public comment. Does that make sense?
Marika, this is Steve Del Bianco. That was exactly the plan that makes sense to me. Are there any other drafting team members who have concerns with that process? Wolf Ulrich, your hand is up.
Oh, thanks, Steve, for always speaking. Just a last comment to what Marika was saying. Well, I fully agree to that process, but in the end, I understand that, you know, if after the GNSO procedures have been revised, that is up to the council to move that forward. Is that correct, Marika? That means because the council...
There's a public comment period.
Yes.
First. And okay. Then, you're and right, then you're exactly right. Council would have to approve.
To the council of deciding.
That's right.
Okay.
So our drafting team has probably one more bite at this apple, that when staff comes back with the timelines and interpretation of our wishes from this call, we'll quickly see whether drafting team members have any revisions to that. And I'm on the assumption that staff is able to come back with a plan that meets our recommendations. Great. If staff may come back and say, your recommendations don't make any sense, we need to have another call to work out some problems, then we'll have to reconvene. But if we take a look at what comes back with the timelines and they all make sense, then we ask staff then to go to the public comment. Now, our drafting team report, the one we approved a while ago, is something that's already an official document, but we have supplemented that report with clarifications, and staff will work with us to be sure that the drafting team, that it's noted that the drafting team stayed engaged and answered implementation questions, and that those answers inform modifications that are reflected in the staff recommendation, staff report. Okay, Wolf Ulrich, everyone else. All right, thanks everyone for enduring such a long call. We'll wrap this up and see you again on the email list in a few days. Thank you.
Thank you, bye.